The Federal Communications Commission will vote Thursday on a plan to undo the landmark 2015 rules that had placed internet service providers like Comcast and Verizon under the strictest ever regulatory oversight. The vote is expected to repeal so-called net neutrality rules, which prevent broadband companies from slowing down or blocking any sites or apps, or otherwise deciding what content gets to users faster. GLT's Ryan Denham has more with two Bloomington Normal experts on what this change could mean for local internet users.
I'm joined in studio by Mark DeKiersgeeter, Executive Director of the Central Illinois Regional Broadband Network, or CERBN. Also by Mix and the Executive Director of the Institute for Regulatory Policy Studies at Illinois State University. Mark, David, before we even get started, we might want to explain what net neutrality is. And no offense, but I'm going to outsource that to John Oliver, a host of HBO's Last Week Tonight. He's a comedian, but he did a pretty good job with his explanation on this particular story.
Net neutrality is actually hugely important. Essentially, it means that all data has to be treated equally, no matter who creates it. It's why the internet is a weirdly level playing field. And startups can supplant established brands. That's how Facebook supplanted MySpace, which supplanted Friendster, which supplanted actually having any friends. Do you remember physically having friends? It was awful. You couldn't tap people's faces to make them go away. The point is, the internet in its current form is not broken. And the FCC is currently taking steps to fix that.
Mark, I'll start with you. Is John Oliver's explanation of net neutrality in broad strokes accurate? Is that about right?
Yeah, I would say it's a good, you know, quick answer, an elevator speech answer.
How would you describe it?
I would say there's three main things with net neutrality. It's really about blocking content. It's about throttling content. And it's also about paid prioritization.
Mark, what effect do you think our history with net neutrality, having it in place, has had on the internet, how it's developed, how companies have sprouted and grown in that space?
Well, it is an equal playing field, and so that gives everyone an equal chance to put their site up and have people access that, or to provide a service and be able to sell their service on the internet.
David, this issue has been an issue for years. That John Oliver clip we just played is 3 years old. But now that we have a Republican-led FCC, it may actually happen now. Can you talk at all about the history of this particular regulatory issue a bit? In other words, why is this keep coming up and why now?
The FCC first set a set of principles for net neutrality back in 2010. So that it's been at least 7 years, and they discussed it for many years before that. So this isn't a new issue, but the question is, legally, how do you do that at the Federal Communications Commission? They try to do it with the internet labeled as an information service, and so that has a class of rules. And the court said, no, you can't impose these rules if it's an information service, because the law is set up such that information services have very light regulation. And so then they changed it and said that this is a communication service, a common carrier service. That holds a whole bunch of other regulations, including price regulation, profit regulation. And the FCC said, well, we're not going to do all those things, but we are going to impose these principles. And now what they're reversing and saying, you know what, we don't want to label the internet or internet service providers as common carriers, so we're going to dismantle what had happened before.
And Mark, I think a lot of people in our community associate you with the internet for obvious reasons. One of the reasons we brought you in today is you're the executive director of the Central Illinois Regional Broadband Network. What kind of questions are people asking you about net neutrality over the past month, and how worried should people be about this?
Yeah, while I'm out at chamber and economic development events, I get asked quite often, what's up with this net neutrality? What is it really? And I usually get a disclaimer like, you know, make it easy so I can understand this. And so, you know, I kind of go back to the three main tenets I kind of led with: blocking, throttling, and paid prioritization. And so when you can go through that quickly, kind of in a little elevator speech, if you will, it helps people understand it pretty good like that.
Are people asking these questions in a concerned way? Are they just curious? So what would you say their kind of sentiment is?
I think from a consumer standpoint, most people, you know, a lot of people use Netflix or another streaming video service. And that's the biggest threat I think most people from a consumer standpoint have, is what is this going to mean the way I consume content now? You know, the latest internet stats are from back in 2015 show, if you Google it, that about one-third, over one-third of all traffic is video streaming. A large chunk of that's Netflix. You can't find anything newer than that on the internet as far as the stat goes. But what I can tell you is that on our own network for Serban, keep in mind many of our businesses are, many of our clients are businesses, organizations, municipalities. We do have universities, colleges. We also support internet service providers that do sell residential service. About two-thirds of all of our traffic at any given time is Netflix traffic, or I should say video streaming. It could be Netflix, it could be Hulu, it could be something else, but about two-thirds at any given time is video streaming.
For folks who may not even know what Central Illinois Regional Broadband Network is, could you just kind of give us a quick recap of what Serban is exactly?
Yeah, when President Obama was elected the first time, he had the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act to kind of get the economy going again. And in that act, that grant, they had what was called the Broadband Technology Opportunity Program. And they earmarked money to develop rural broadband for areas that were not served with fiber or high-speed broadband or were underserved. So it was really geared towards rural markets. And three guys from ISU who were already searching for better bandwidth and faster, cheaper, et cetera, applied for a grant and got $17.6 million. ISU received that grant. They built out the Serban network, and then once the grant was completed at the end of 2013, all the assets were transferred to Serban LLC, which owns and operates the network.
And that's what you're running?
Yes.
How would the end of net neutrality affect Serban?
It really wouldn't affect us at all, and the reason why I say that is there's two things. First of all, you know, we're mission built to provide access, and that's our mission, and a large focus of that is educational opportunities for children, K through 12, college, university, community colleges, etc. And so back to our mission to begin with, you know, we wouldn't get into the business of throttling or blocking or anything like that. We use the internet as an economic development tool for the communities we serve. So we wouldn't do anything on our end. And when we think about our upstreams, you know, we purchase upstream internet access in major metropolitan area. We have multiple upstream providers in major cities, in multiple cities. And the way we have a relationship with them, where we're already paying them for that bandwidth, it's highly unlikely that they would be doing any throttling or anything like that, because where we're buying it in the common, the carrier hotels, it's very competitive. There's multiple carriers there. Net neutrality is more focused, in my opinion, a lot on the last mile providers. And even though we're a last mile provider, that's not, you know, we're net neutral now, and we would remain net neutral regardless of what regulation may or may not do.
Do you think that the end of net neutrality would potentially change the mix of offerings for internet access at Bloomington Normal? Right now, for a typical consumer, it's probably a Comcast, maybe a Metronet if their neighborhood has been built out by that kind of upstart fiber operator. What do you guys think in terms of what this could potentially change in terms of offerings for your average consumer?
I really don't think it's going to change all that much for most consumers, because I don't think that many of the providers are going to have an incentive to move off of net neutrality. The problem that you're going to have is that you have what economists call information asymmetry. That if I do get throttled or if I there's a problem, I don't know whether the problem is on Netflix server side. I don't know where it is in the backbone that I'm getting slow access, or whether that's in the last mile. And it's only the service provider that really knows what they're doing in controlling traffic. So even though I'd like to have a free market solution, you're not going to have one, because I can't really get the information that I need to make a good and solid choice. And the second thing you pointed out, you have a limited number of providers. So in a competitive market, you need a lot of different providers. So I think the market would discipline providers to say, no, we're going to stay net neutral. And then there might be a provider that says, hey, we'll offer you Netflix and you'll never have a queue, you'll never wait at all. And somebody might say, gee, you know, two-thirds of my traffic is Netflix, maybe 100% of my traffic is Netflix, and I want to go with that provider. But the choices here, and we're not atypical, is very limited in terms of the number of providers that you can go to. And so you could get forced into a choice that you really don't want.
I think that's a really good point that David makes in that, you know, I know a lot of times people are very frustrated with their residential internet service, but the fact that there are, depending on where you live in town, literally, you know, three, you know, maybe four options for internet service in Bloomington Normal, that's not typical. There are many people that I talk to, they have one choice and that's it. And when you have one choice and that's it, a provider would have, would be more apt to make some sort of decision where they could capitalize more by making different service classes or throttling things.
This is GLT's Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. I'm here in the studio with Dave Loomis, Professor of Economics at Illinois State University and Executive Director of its Institute for Regulatory Policy Studies, as well as Mark DeKiersgeeter, Executive Director of the Central Illinois Regional Broadband Network, or CERBN. Where would we see potentially the first changes when I think when folks hear about something like this and there are maybe concerns about what this could mean for me, the average consumer, there's a lot of kind of doomsday speculation about this is going to change everything. But like, what would be like maybe the actual first thing we might see change in day-to-day life as a kind of an internet user?
Well, I don't think you're going to see much change really at all. I don't think the providers are going to change much. And just remembering that the FCC's backtracking on these principles, but it doesn't mean that really net neutrality goes away. It means that the federal agency that's going to get oversight for this is going to shift from the Federal Communications Commission to the Federal Trade Commission. The problem there is the FCC has at its disposal more people to monitor, and they can impose heavier fines. And the Federal Trade Commission acts more as kind of a last stop regulator. Somebody has to complain and say, you know what, I think something fishy is going on, here's a problem. And as we said before, that's really hard for the average consumer to really know that. And so I think we're going to, if firms do treat traffic unequally, it's going to be a long time before we know that they've done it and see something before the Federal Trade Commission. And so I don't expect anything to change in the very near term.
What impact do you think this could have on startups and these kind of younger tech companies who've historically relied on that kind of equal playing field that the internet is sort of notorious for?
If you look at the big telecommunications provider, you look at the AT&T and the Verizons of the world, part of this is kind of, my opinion, is a jealousy. They look at the Netflix, Facebook, Google making tons and tons of money, and they're not making so much money. And they're like, you know, you're leveraging all our assets. We do the hard work. We lay the fiber. We dig the trenches. And all you do is have a little server farm out here, put up an application that everybody loves, and we're not making the money that you're making. And so they want to have what economists call a two-sided market. We want money both from the end user, but we want money from Facebook, Google, Netflix to help support the broadband network that we've built out. And so I don't think it's really the startups, the small startups. I think everybody says, yeah, this is good. It's those small startups that have come to be huge companies that are making large amounts of money that, in a certain sense, the internet service providers are jealous of, and they want a slice of that pie. And the way that they do that is paid prioritization. We will get with Amazon, you're going to make money on this customer. So if you pay us some extra, we'll make sure that you have no interruptions and all of your pages load instantly, but you give us a slice of the pie.
So, Mark, the FCC chairman said during a recent interview on NPR, talking about the end of net neutrality, and how it might impact small towns where there aren't that many choices for internet service providers. He said that heavy-handed regulation is not the solution here, and that companies say they want to invest in these rural, smaller, low-income areas, but it's a hard business case to make with net neutrality in place in the way that it is today. I guess, do you buy that? What should we think of that kind of that argument?
First of all, I think the amount of investment to lay fiber is something that a lot of people underestimate. You know, Serban's network was built out with $17.6 million. And it hit rural communities that if we didn't have that grant money, they still would not have any fiber assets in those communities. And when you look at a map of central Illinois, we're talking about places like, you know, Pontiac, Illinois, Towanda, Lexington, Eureka, Gridley. You know, so, you know, back to we were talking earlier about the number of providers within central Illinois. We're really kind of blessed, not only in Bloomington-Normal, but just the fact that ISU had the foresight to apply for that grant and be able to build out this community resource. So back to the rural communities, I think there's a big struggle there because, you know, for the carriers to maintain the existing infrastructure they have and then deploy new infrastructure into a rural area like that, they're a business. They're going to want to make sure they have a return on that investment. And so I just see, you know, it depends on the size of the community, and it's purely a numbers game whether or not they'll have funding to hit certain areas with fiber.
And I don't think that net neutrality is going to change that investment equation. It's expensive to lay fiber. Any technology that you're going to get in rural areas, you're going to have to go long distances from one customer to get to the other customer. As opposed to, you know, in Chicago, customers are just densely packed, and so you can address a million people in a very short amount of space, and it lowers your cost per unit of serving those customers. Net neutrality is not going to change that. And just to Mark's point, the Google tried to do this and rolling out Google Fiber in many cities, and now they've stopped because they thought we could do it cheap and we can service the customers, and they found that, yeah, it's really expensive and we're not going to do this anymore.
The industry average, and it fluctuates by states and things like that, but to bore fiber underground in a downtown area where you're going to be, you know, cutting concrete, breaking up asphalt, digging down, exposing utilities all along the path, things like that, it can be $10,000 on average per city block. And then as far as a rural area goes, you could plow fiber in for about $10,000 per mile if you're not boring underneath driveways or other roads along that path. And so the cost to build out a community, you know, look at the infrastructure going in Bloomington-Normal now, it is very expensive to do that.
David, you've alluded to it in a couple different ways with your references to Google and the content providers. But from a regulatory standpoint, can you talk a little bit more about the various sides that there are when it comes to this issue of net neutrality?
Yeah, it's generally the largest internet service providers, the, you know, AT&T, Verizon, Comcast, and others that would be in favor of doing away with these net neutrality rules. And part of that, I think, is associated with this common carrier status, what's called Title II, in the FCC's jurisdiction, and say, no, we're worried about what else might come. And then there's certainly providers that are looking at new business opportunities and being able to have that. I think the biggest thing is the pay prioritization, where they can get additional revenues from those that provide the services, not just their end-use customers. Most of those who are providing those services, say the Netflix of the world, the Facebooks, line up on the other side that say, we like net neutrality, we want to keep it the way that it is, because of, obviously they don't want to pay more money, and they're dubious about what additional services they're going to get for this pay prioritization. It's already, in general, pretty fast, at least sufficient for people's use. And so I think, you know, we've got video streaming down pretty well. Netflix works great at my house. I can do that fine. Sometimes when I'm on my wireless device and I try and watch Netflix when I'm not getting good reception, I remember what Netflix used to be like at home and how I'd have to wait. But I think people are generally satisfied with that. As we get more and more video content, we might see that bogging down more the way it used to be. You know, so if Facebook has video in your news feed, if you're getting more and more, you know, YouTube, you have more Netflix. And as that moves up, so if you get 4K, if you're going to get higher resolution, that's more bandwidth, and it might slow down again, you might see a push on the consumer side to say, you know what, I'd be happy to pay a little bit more if I always get my Netflix exactly the way and when I want it.
Yeah, so the days of the $8.99 Netflix monthly fee is almost been too good to be true for the last couple of years anyway, and now it may be coming to an end. Dave, is there anything that the states can do in their legislatures if they do not want to see net neutrality in its current form die? Or is this something where the FCC and now the FTC pretty much has control over an issue like this?
We don't have correct legislation. So I think, and I don't think it can be a state-by-state thing. I don't think there's an Illinois issue. I think you need to have federal legislation that's more modern, up-to-date with where the industry is now, but more importantly, where are we headed? And if you want net neutrality principles, you got to write them into the law and say, this is the agency that's going to enforce them, and this is just the way it's going to be. And so I think we're long overdue. I'd like to see federal legislation that says, what's our guiding principle in terms of telecommunication? How does wireline and wireless mix? And where are we going to move forward in terms of new technology for the coming decades?
Mark, any closing thoughts for you as consumers who are listening to this and wondering how they should be thinking of this net neutrality issue? It's going to be in the news a lot in the next 2-3 weeks here.
The FCC is going to take a vote on this. Everybody knows that. And the thing I would say is the internet's not going to stop working the next day. It'll still be on. It'll still work. You'll still be able to stream things. You'll still be able to send email. And regardless of how the vote shakes out, you know, business will continue on as usual. If the net neutrality tenants are removed, I believe, much like David said, you know, we're talking about really large carriers and the carriers that will probably want to go back to certain companies that leverage the internet to make a lot of money, more money than what more money than what the carriers are making, or that they want a slice of that pie, I should say. And so I think from a consumer standpoint, you know, people should be comfortable in knowing the internet's still going to be on, they're still going to be able to use it. And we've got a number of providers here in Bloomington Normal, which means with competition, the providers here will have to remain competitive if they want to keep people's business.
Yeah. That's Mark DeKeersgeeter, the executive director of the Central Illinois Regional Broadband Network. He was joined in studio today by Dave Loomis, the professor of economics and executive director for the Institute for Regulatory Policy Studies at Illinois State University. I'm Ryan Denham.
The FCC's vote to undo the net neutrality rules is set for Thursday. You're listening to Sound Ideas on 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.